Harih Om Sahanam Bhavatu Sahanam Bhunaktu Sahavirnyam Karavavahai Tejasvinavagitamastama Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, talk of 38. Sutta Goswami continued. Like their elder brother, the other Pandavas also took note of the symptoms of Kali. In every way they followed Yudhishthira's example. As the Pandavas trod the path of renunciation, they meditated upon the lotus feet of Lord Krishna as the supreme goal of life. In this way, wrapped in deep personal trance, each and every one of the Pandavas in his self-same body entered Lord Krishna's supreme abode, Goloka Vrindavan. Sutta Goswami then reveals that while traveling on pilgrimage, Vidura left his body at Prabhasa so that he could be reinstated in his original post as the Lord of Pitri Loka. 45-48. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur reveals the difference between the Pandavas and Vidura, all great devotees of the Lord. They, the Pandavas, attained the dwelling place free of all faults. How did they attain it? They attained it in their same spotless bodies, devoid of their devata expansions, such as Yamaraj for Yudhishthira. They did not give up their bodies. Vidura was an incarnation of a devata, not an eternal associate. Therefore, he gave up his body. The Pitris had come to lead him to his abode. Right? So, there was, in these kind of pastimes where the Lord's coming or his devotees are coming, then many times we see is that there's other aspects of pastimes that are involved. So those aspects will be merged with the form that they're using. Does that make sense? Just like Mother Sachi and Jagannath Misra, Lord Chaitanya's parents, then they embody all the other parents of the Lord. You know, Kasyapa and Aditi and everybody else. So in here is that the Pandavas, then they have those elements of Yamaraj, Indra, and those aspects, and the aspect of those aspects. So those are left behind, and then they just go as it is. So it's not that they need to change bodies. Right? So this is very special. They've come in their spiritual forms, they're performing their activities, they're going back with them. But when they come here, then those other aspects merge in them, so all these elements are taken care of. Right? As we see. So it's more elements of mood. This mood is actually the most important aspect. Most of the time we take it that it's the external activity or form that's important. It's actually the mood that's important. Because you only do a certain activity if there's a certain mood. Right? Nrisimhadeva is killing Hiranyakashipu because of his mood of anger. Right? If he's not angry, why would he do that? Does that make sense? So sometimes we miss that the importance of mood. This mood is the real thing. So if you want to establish something, that's why it says guna and karma. Right? Because the karma is the skill, the ability. Guna is the actual attitude or the mood. If that's not right, even if you can do the karma, it still won't work out. Just as if you have the right mood but can't do the skill. Right? The guy's really enthusiastic, he'd really like to do it, but he can't cook to save himself. It's still not going to work out. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah? So, the two go together. So here's that the mood is there, then we have these other aspects. So the Lord has a particular mood. So Vasudeva is a particular mood. That makes sense. Narayan's a mood. Sankarshan's a mood. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So then there's all these, that's the uniqueness, is that mood. Right? Then to match that mood, there's further uniqueness, right? Because in other words, if it's unique, it should have, the elements should match it. So they should have similar uniqueness. Right? Therefore, Varaha looks very different than Vamana. It looks very different than Parasaram. Right? So the ton avatars, the one thing about them is they all look very uniquely different. Their mood, because their moods are so uniquely different. Yes?
So if you're not getting something done, you should change your mood?
I know, you have to just see. It could be if you have the skill, but then it could be the mood. It could also be you just need practice and you have to develop the skill. You know, like that. Or both, you know. Just like we're sadhakas, so we have the understanding of what the goal is. We have an idea of what we want. But it's not necessarily that the mood is fully appropriate, because it needs to be pure devotion. Right? So we're developing that, but that's also in it, we're developing our skill, our ability to focus on our chanting, or, you know, chant nicely, or do the different elements of devotional service. Does that make sense? So it can be, they go together. That's why it's mentioned, guna and karma. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
Right. The pure devotee, like the Pandava, they have the same. They have always the same mood. In the spiritual world or in the material.
Yes. No. The mood's the same. They are who they are. Just like Mother Yashoda comes and takes part in the Gokul pastimes. It's still the same mood as in the Goloka. See, there's no difference between Goloka and Gokul. We make the difference because of our need for time and, you know, to view things through time and space.
Yes.
So for us, then, a different space is a very important difference. But it's actually, it's the same place, just it has two manifestations. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, let's say, you have a, you know, some kind of store that has a chain, right? So, you know, there's one in New York, there's one in London, there's one in Paris, there's one in Milan. Okay? So the point is walking into it, you should get the same experience.
Yes.
Right? The same kind of service, the same products, the same everything.
Yes.
So when you walk into there, it's not like it's in the same place. It's not like it's New York, or it's just, it will be that flavor.
Yes.
Right? In other words, it'll be Paris. Right? Right?
Of course.
Yes. Paris, London, New York, Milan. It's going to be Paris, right? Yeah. Yeah. Does that make sense? So, therefore, it's the same thing, just different manifestations. So it Goloka and Gokula are the same place. It's just that one is manifest lower and one is manifest in the higher position. Right? That's the thing. And because there's two, then there's always that slight differences. Activities are different. So the childhood pastimes, the killing of the demons, these kind of things, these are unique in the Gokul. That's the Visesha there. Does that make sense? Right? So one would say, no, but there's you know, that childhood pastimes also in Golok. Yes, but then that's the area that you always function in. You don't go through it as if. It means here you go through it like it's the human thing. You know, you're born as a baby and grow up. Right? And then disappear. There it's just eternally it's always Krishna's a baby. Or eternally he's, you know, 5 or he's 10 or he's 15, like that. Does that make sense? So this thing of in that time going through all of these at once, that happens in Gokul. So that's the uniqueness. Because otherwise everybody doesn't see those passing, because that's not their focus. Does that make sense? Yeah. Seeing her five husbands depart home, Draupadi absorbed her mind fully in Lord Krishna, as did Arjuna's wife Subhadra. And thus these glorious ladies attained the same result as their exalted husbands. 50. Srila Prabhupada explains, when flying an airplane, one cannot take care of other planes. Everyone has to take care of his own plane. And if there is any danger, no other plane can help another in that condition. Similarly, at the end of life, when one has to go back home, back to Godhead, everyone has to take care of himself without help rendered by another. Right? The help is, however, offered on the ground before flying in space. Similarly, the spiritual master, the father, the mother, the relatives, the husband, and others can all render help during one's lifetime. But while crossing the sea, one has to take care of himself and utilize the instructions formerly received. Right? So this is means, because otherwise you may say, oh, how come they didn't worry about her? Because this is crossing time. This is not hanging out together as a family time. This is going back to Godhead time. You have to do that yourself. Yes. Yes. Right? Because that's the whole point. Going back to Godhead means your commitment to that process. So, as Prabhupada mentions, on the ground, then one can get so much help in what is the proper understanding, the proper practice, the proper yes. knowledge. Yes. And then one can be guided through that. But the actual crossing you have to do yourself.
Yes.
So since that's what they're doing, because one could say, well, this is insensitive. They just, you know, stopped dealing with the external world and just left. But the point is no, that means, but where are they leaving to? Hey, they're going yes. back to Godhead. So yes. each one does that themselves. Right? Like that. Because we have to remember, it's the position of the soul is not here, it's there. Right? Here is not the place of the soul. Here is the place of dead matter. Right? Does that make sense? So the spiritual world is the place of the soul. So one's going there, one doesn't come back. Those relations are eternal. You don't have to give those up. Right? But here, those external elements, those arrangements, those are temporary. They will be given up, either voluntarily or by force. Now, you either voluntarily, let's say, give up your possessions, you know, and give them to the next generation, or they will be taken away. You leave anyway, and they're just left there, and then who knows what happens to them, right? Because the rule is if you have property and you give it to somebody, then it goes to them. If you don't, and there's nobody, it goes to the state. You know, that's just how it works. So the whole point is you have to at some point give everything up. Everything will be left. Because if you're going to leave the body, why not everything else connected to the body, right? Your money, your house, your car, you know, how do you say your Italian, you know, leather shoes. They're all just connected to the body. So if you're leaving the body, why wouldn't they go? Right? That makes sense. Yes? No? Okay, yes.
Here it means that when they all left, it means they were going back to Godhead. It's not the process, it's just the...
Yeah, they're just going.
No, because devotees usually, they help each other at the time of death. You know, everybody's around.
But can you get him to think? You're going into his mind and, you know, getting him to think this and that. You know, are we talking about, you know, mindscape here or something? No. So the point is that's ground. That's what they're talking about,
yes.
ground help.
Yes.
You know? Is that you do kirtan in that, but they still have to think of Krishna. You could be doing kirtan and they could be thinking of their,
yes.
you know, mother's, you know, how you say, you know, spaghetti or something, you know? Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the thing, is you have to do it yourself. But in this case, they're already trained in that, so there's just they're going. Because in this, there's no problem. Look at it this way: they're leaving for Krishna. Right? It's not that the Pandavas are walking out and finding other ladies, right? So then, what's the problem? Draupadi won't have any problem with that. You know. Plus, the thing is that. You know, you're undertaking hardship and that, and in the home it's comfortable. So then, naturally, she might want to stay there. Right? And then they're going out and being austere. Now, if she wants to come, they don't have any problem. But they're not going to ask her to come. Right? Because this is the kind of thing, you either want to be there or you don't. This is not a maybe situation. Well, let me just try it out, you know. You know, because if she walks halfway up Gandamandana and decides, no, I'm not doing this, then what happens? They got to bring her back, so it doesn't work. It's not a social, it doesn't have that kind of element to it. Does that make sense? You know? Yes.
Maharaj, I understand there's no groundhog, but Krishna always helps us.
Yes, of course.
So help comes from up?
Yes, but we have to take advantage of that help. It's just like, let's say you're in a well and someone throws you a rope. You can't ask them to come down into the well and tie it around your waist. You have to grab it and you have to hold on. So that's the system, is that you have to hold on to the rope, but at the same time as they're pulling the rope. Right? So if we'll take one step towards Krishna, he'll reciprocate with 10. But we still have to take one, because if we don't take one, then where's the reciprocation? How is the reciprocation? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Draupadi had 5 husbands, and no one asked Draupadi to come. Draupadi had to take care of herself without waiting for her great husbands. And because she was already trained, she at once took to concentration upon the lotus feet of Lord Vasudeva, Krishna, the personality of Godhead. Because she's already been trained. And we can say, oh, they just left her there. No, they didn't. They already prepared everything. They already trained and did everything. So now all it is she has to do it. You know? Just like, let's say, you teach the kid how to put on their shoes. So then you just, you know, say, okay, we got to go now, and then walk out of the room. Right? They know how to put on their shoes. Right? You know, how you say, that seemingly amazing task that they can actually do, it's a reality. You know?
Indian shoes much easier.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting is that Manu, but yes, because it's, you know, because they're prepared, they're made for that. It's interesting how Manu makes the distinction between shoes you can put on yourself or shoes that you need help with. Right? Now, in help means we would look, as Westerners, we would look at it, all shoes you can do yourself. But the point is you put your shoes on, you know, these Western shoes, you have to wash your hands if you want to do anything pure.
Yes.
So that's the whole point, is that before, then that would mean someone else would put them on for you. You're going to go for the puja, someone else would put your shoes on.
Yes.
So that's why it's recommended. Brahmins only use shoes they can put on themselves. So that means you don't have, that means yes, without having to use your hands.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Yeah. So therefore, that little funny thing in the back, if it's forward, then it's shoes you can put on yourself. If it's back, it's shoes that someone else has to help you with. But, so you get all options then, right? Universal shoe. Right?
So now,
yes,
it seems that in this time, all the Pandava and the Dhritarashtra, they were all trained to make the next step in their,
yes,
life.
They all knew how to do it because they're trained as brahmacharis, because vanaprastha is just going back to the brahmachari mode. It's just that now you're independent instead of being under someone's direct,
yes,
guidance. That's the difference between a vanaprastha and a brahmachari, is the vanaprastha is mature.
Yes.
Right? So he has the training, he has experience, so he can do it on his own. While a brahmachari, generally someone tells him what to do.
Yes.
Right, that's the difference. So that training is there. That is the point, as Prabhupada's making, is that there isn't this training. It should be this training is there for everyone, so that at the end of life, everyone can do this. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. Okay. The wives also got the same result as their husbands. In the same manner, that is to say, without changing their bodies, they reached the destination of Godhead. So Draupadi also is the eternal associate, but she has that amsha of the goddess of fortune, meaning Indrani. Right? Not the, means when you see Lakshmi with Narayan, that's the spiritual Lakshmi. When you see Lakshmi there herself and gold coins are pouring out of her palms and there's elephants there and that's Indra's wife. That's where that form is coming from. Does that make sense? The two different Lakshmi. We understand that that Lakshmi, Dina Lakshmi, is coming from the original Lakshmi. So we'll just see the original Lakshmi. But for others, they see, because we'll see her connected with Vishnu. So it is Vishnu's Lakshmi. But most see her without Vishnu, that the money's for me, it's not any connection to the Lord. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the part she leaves behind. Right? Just like the Pandavas, they leave behind their different aspects of the demigod, duties. Then she leaves that behind. And Subhadra, she's Yoga Maya anyway. There's nothing to leave behind here. Right?
We see through different scriptures.
Yes.
Those different aspects, are they presented in like the Devi Bhagavatamrita, or are they different levels?
Devi Bhagavatamrita is not some Devi Bhagavat. Yeah, Devi Bhagavat's not something that we actually get involved with. So in other words, in the Puranic Encyclopedia, if the quote is not from Devi Bhagavat, then we take it seriously. If it's from Devi Bhagavat, we're not so concerned with it. Right? Not that there won't be some elements there that are correct. We could explain it properly. But its presentation, it's meant, it's like the Tamasic Puranas. It's meant for presenting Devi as supreme. Right? Just like the Puranas will present Shiva as supreme. So the Devi Bhagavat presents her as supreme. So in the Puranic Encyclopedia, if it's Devi Bhagavat, then generally we don't worry about it. Previously there were Puranic Encyclopedias that didn't have Devi Bhagavat in it. But those are real old. I mean, I remember seeing one, and our president had one in 73, I saw it. But it was an old book then. You know, so who knows, it was probably published in the 50s or something like that. So in those days, a lot of stuff was, nice stuff was published. So there was. So I was actually surprised when I saw it. Yeah, I thought it was Puranic Encyclopedia's one book. It's just an encyclopedia of all Puranic quotes. So anyone could put together one. So there seems to be different editions than these ones that are without Devi Bhagavat seem to be out of print. You know, so all this printed are the ones that have the Devi Bhagavat. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So the different aspects of Draupadi, Lakshmi, Radharani, Indrani, they're all available from just one source, or do we take them from...
No, it means otherwise, why have so many Puranas, why have so many things, unless they're explaining different aspects? Mm-hmm. Right? The point is that Devi Bhagavat, who compiled that, I'm not sure. I'm sure there is a particular person, but it's not Vyas. That's why we're not worried about it. It's not that it's something that's predominantly about Devi is what the problem is. The problem is it's not compiled by Vyas or compiled by those in that line. Right? So that's why we're not so interested in it. But otherwise, Mahabharata will say things that means Bhagavatam, it gets into less detail here because we understand the process that's already been explained. But other technical details are explained in Mahabharata. You know, and that's already calling from, you get other details in the Yoga Shastras or this or that. You know, what does it mean absorbing the mind? You know, so we got an idea from Yudhishthira that he just folds everything back up. But we see that's a very special meditation. Right? The Patanjali, I'm not sure that they exactly do like that. But here it's like it's wrapping it up completely, because then everything will be gone here and then you transfer yourself to the spiritual realm. You know what I'm saying? So there's different ways you can do something. Does that make sense? Like, from this spot you're in, how do you go to the temple? Is there one definitive way? No. It means you can get up, walk out that way, you can walk out this way, you can walk this way. You know what I'm saying? When you get out the gate, you could turn right, go down that way. You could also turn late, go down the Gammon Road. You could turn, you know, then when you get up to the end, you could go right. You could go left and go by this way and go in. You know, once you get down to the end, you could either continue across or go across to the next one and go down. You could go back to the one before. You could go all kinds of ways. So that's the thing, is that the Shastras are explaining all these different ways. The acharyas give you what's the recommended way. There's so many ways you could do things. So devotees come up and say, oh, they read here, oh, there's other things you could do. Yes, you could. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So, but the acharyas give a recommendation. And these recommendations are generally quite useful, like going back to Godhead in one lifetime. That's pretty useful. Because the other Pancharatric texts don't describe it like that. Like I said, I'm not sure. I kind of remember something like it's 12 or 14 verse by the Madhva process. Like that. It means eventually you have to become Brahma, and then from Brahma you go. Or at least you have to get to Brahma Loka, and then go from there. You know, so it's a whole thing. You have to, that whole thing where you have to go over the Shishumara, and those things you have to do. But for us, we don't bother with that. So why not take the simpler path? You know what I'm saying? You know, stick your hand around like this. You can probably put it under your leg. You know, you could like that. You know what I'm saying? You can do all kinds of things.
You know? The acharyas describe that. Is that also because they are of that level? They're coming from a different dimension?
Yeah, that's there. But it's just you can see what's the most direct path. Because mm-hmm. The ego down here is going, you know, this way may not be as interesting as going that way.
Yes.
You know, or someone's more into exercise, or
yes.
You know, like that. So it's just their point is don't play around here. You use the most efficient method.
Mm-hmm.
And pure devotional service is the only efficient method. Everything else is slow. You know, Arsene could say slower. You know, because the Vedic path will eventually get you back to Godhead, just on its own. But the point is the qualifications you need, because it's set 100 lifetimes of perfectly following the Vedic, you know, injunctions with no mistakes, then that will take you to Vaikuntha. You know, just nothing else, it'll get you to Vaikuntha. Right? Because it's mentioned that if you're going to do it properly, it has to be Naishkarmya. Otherwise, how do you do it perfectly, and how do you do it perfectly for 100 lifetimes? As Vishwanath mentioned, Naishkarmya can get you into Vaikuntha. Right? But it has to be pure devotion to get you into Goloka. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
So it seems like Srila Prabhupada, he gives the mood right in the beginning.
Yes. Yes.
But then neophytes, it's difficult to understand the mood.
Yes.
We have to practice it.
Yes. Yes, so that's why association is important. What's important is the mood. So if someone doesn't understand it, you don't change the externals because you don't understand the mood. That's the difficulty, is that the modern society, if it doesn't understand it, due to lack of qualifications, then they try to change the externals. Right? But it's not about it. Everything is already there. It's just like this. Draupadi knew what to do. Why did she know what to do? Because she's already trained. She's already been given that facility. So husbands made sure everything is there. Right? So it's already taken care of by the Vedic culture. Just like in the Vedic culture, the man would want to see that everything's there for the wife if he's going to in some way not, either himself he won't be around, or, you know, either voluntarily or not, you know. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
He makes arrangements, but nowadays, because in the modern culture no one thinks about those things, then you have to have a rule that, you know, the husband has to take care of things before he can take sannyas. Right? But in the Vedic, it's a normal thing. Right, because of relationship. But the sad part is why is that there? Why is that rule there? Did it come from these elements of the Vedic culture? No, it came from the modern. So
yeah.
It's weak. So in other words, it's even though the intent is good, the rule is actually pretty mundane. It's a mundane rule because it's not coming from, it's not a matter of duty. It says, oh, how can you leave your wife? But what the point is, what do you mean? How is that? What is the basis of that? How can you leave your wife? Where is it coming from? It's coming from a mundane point. It's not even coming from Dharma. You know. And then there's the point you're going to die anyway. You know what I'm saying? So that's what we have to be very careful about. That's what I'm meaning, is that the mood means it goes through, it has that element of pure devotion that's then expressed through the Vedic culture. And the Vedic culture has its ideal mode of goodness examples of how it should be applied. But if not, you can adjust it down to whatever situation you're in. But you have to start first with pure devotion, next with what is the actual principles of the Vedic culture, and then apply it to your situation, right? Because first is the Veda, then there's Shruti, then there's Smriti, then the instructions of the Acharyas, then you apply it into your position. So if you don't start with pure devotion, you don't start with the tradition, you don't say how the Acharya showed us this tradition, then applying your life, where else are you going to get it from? If it's not coming from authority, it's not coming from Shabda, where will it come from? Pratyaksha Anuman. So therefore it's mundane. Even though the intent is good. But we have to remember, pranamoy, it's about isms. It looks good. But its purpose, underlying purpose of pranamoy is simply that, you know, I can get more sense gratification by cooperating. It's just like if I try to scratch my back, it's a little bit difficult. But if I work it out, I'll scratch your back, you scratch mine, then it's a better scratch. You know, the quality of scratch improves. You understand? So that's what pranamoy is about. But because to get people to do that, you have to inspire them by some kind of ism, you know, cooperation or this or that, then it seems to be better. And because the modern religions are only pranamoy, therefore we make the mistake that it's spiritual. Right? It's sub-religious, not spiritual. Because the soul's not involved. You have to involve the soul. Saying I'm not the body, it doesn't involve the soul. It simply says I'm not the body. It didn't say I'm the soul. We're not this body, Prabhu. Okay, great. But what are we? You understand? So it's not spiritual. That's why we have to be very, very careful in discerning. That's why the Bhagavatam in the beginning throws out anything that's not pure devotion. So what we're discussing here in these examples, we're working on the platform of pure devotion. So to take these examples, you have to understand they have to be applied with the mood of pure devotion. So if that's appreciated, then the neophyte matures into a madhyama. If not, if they get caught in these things and they think that these are real and they're spiritual, they will remain as neophytes. Right? But the good part about it is that if you remember Krishna at the time of death, the neophyte can go back to Godhead. But the problem is that when you get back to Godhead, then you'll still be on that platform. You know, of the liberated souls, you will be the neophyte. Yes. You know, in other words, if it's about externals, then you're the one that's going to get it, you know, into, you know, making the nice cow dung patties on the wall and cooking for the family and feeding the little kids and doing your duties around the house. So when Krishna plays the flute, you'll be busy.
Yes.
Right? You understand? So, in other words, the ones that didn't go, those are the ones that were not, hadn't had that advanced association and took advantage of it. But the point is the process is perfect. They did then understood take advantage of it, and then they became part of the scene. It just slows it down a bit. So if you want to be out on the first night, you got to move up. You know. If you're comfortable with getting, you know, everybody coming in with sticks and locking you in your room, then hey, you know. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is devotional service is the perfect thing, not the mundane. The mundane is never perfect. It just isn't. It can't be. But you connect it to the Lord, then it becomes. But connect to the Lord means it's actually connected, not, you know, how you say it? Just what's it? Lip service is not connection. As I said, we're not this body, doesn't connect it to the Lord. Connected to the Lord is I am the soul is I'm a servant of Krishna, and the natural thing is in devotion. So if it's devotion, it means it's to please Krishna. I have to make sure that what I'm talking about is actually going to please Krishna. And if I'm opposing his culture, and the 20th quality of Krishna is he follows the Vedic culture. So how is that going to please Krishna? You understand? So you have to be very, very careful here. That's the difficulty, is that we take it too easily. It rolls off the tongue. It sounds good. So therefore, you know, it's okay. But we have to remember is our conditioning, isn't an advantage. That's the problem. The neophyte thinks my conditioning's an advantage. I'm educated, therefore I'm more advanced. Or, I was a practical guy, I was successful in the world, therefore I'm more advanced. Or, whatever it is, I was more detached. Or, whatever it is, the qualities one had as a materialist, one thinks that those are qualifications in devotional service when they're not. Yeah.
Sometimes we see that with the time in devotional service, we develop conditioning in devotional service.
Well, that's what you can get there? Conditioned by goodness. So the devotees are getting conditioned by goodness, but acting within other modes. Because goodness includes the other modes.
So it's an advantage on whatever we had before, and disadvantage in pure devotion.
It's only an advantage if it's connected to the Lord. Just like, give an example, like the hippies. They don't have a particular culture, right? And it's basically another. I did look it up. It is called the me generation, like that. They're considered the most self-centered generation of any that post-war up to, I can't remember when it was. I think late, maybe into the 60s. Whoever was born in that era, they're called the me generation because it's about me. So because it's about me. And they don't have any cultural background, really. The individuals might, but in general. I mean, in other words, you don't have to have a particular cultural background to be a hippie. It's pretty open. It's pretty universal, right? So in that way, you can see it's very open and free like that. But so renunciation, for them to just leave whatever they're doing and move into the temple is easy because they don't have a sense of responsibility, sense of duty. They don't have... In other words, gross material attachments in the way of things. Okay, drugs and sex maybe, but things no. So what I'm saying? They're cool, like that. So it has a great advantages on that side, but then as far as having a structured culture, that they don't. Where's the qualification? They don't have it. Well, a professional, now he'll have that qualification of structure, things like that, but that element of letting go and not feeling that I'm in control, now that would be his weakness. So in other words, every conditioning has something that's of value, and everything has something that's weak. There's no such thing as perfect. You know what I'm saying? As far as the culture goes, you're not going to get better than a smarta. Right? Faith in the Shastra, faith in authority, faith in everything that we do. They have it. They just don't have faith that God's a person. That's their weakness. That's tough. But you take generally any Westerner, and most of the time is that God's a person is they're pretty comfortable with. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they don't have any culture. You know what I'm saying? So here's culture without the problem. So these are the extremes. So everything has its strength. Everything has its weakness. So the point is that weakness you can't make into a philosophy and try to present it as a strength. That's wrong. What is strong, take it as strong and useful. What's weak, then understand it's weak. It has to be supported. You know what I'm saying? Let's say you have a chain, right? And there's, the big, nice, those kind of chains where it's got that bar in the middle and, really serious chain. And you're going along looking at the chain, it's looking good, and then you get down to the end and there's a little piece of, aluminum wire kind of like holding two links together. Okay. Now, we could probably, by analyzation and everything, decide this is the weak link. Right? It wouldn't be too far, like that. But then someone says, no, but see, they even put one thing in the middle, trying to connect, like that. So it looks like the others, like that. So if you do that, then your chain is only going to be that strong. If you make it, no, but, he really wants to, he really wants to take part, give him that sincerity. Great. Take a full broad thing and then connect that onto one of the links. But don't say that is a link. Does that make sense? So my mundane attachments aren't actual links in the chain. Right? I can engage them, but they're not actual. They don't have any strength. You know what I'm saying? The strength is I'm engaging in Krishna's service. It itself is of inferior quality. You know what I'm saying? It's just like you have potatoes, and then, you know, they've been sitting around a while. You know, you get those little black holes in the end, or, you know, they get those little, you know, things growing out of them and stuff like that. And, you know what I'm saying? So therefore, but you can take it, cut off the thing, you lose, you know, half the potato, and, you know, you have to cut the skin a little thicker to get, you know, rid of all the eyes and all that stuff like that. And, you know, it was sitting out in the sun for a while, so one side's also green, so you have to cut that off. So you end up with, you know, a third of the potato left. So you can use it, but you lost two-thirds of the potato, right? So now, if I make a philosophy that, no, we shouldn't use new, fresh potatoes. We should only use these old ones and all that. You know what I'm saying? Prabhupada used them. Yeah, he did, but he preached about the new potatoes. You know, in other words, Prabhupada used the Western culture, but he preached the Vedic culture.
Yes.
Does that make sense? So that's what we have to be very, very careful about. Otherwise, then it's just... it's just, you know, obvious what one's attachments are, right? And no amount of, you know, saying, oh, but they're senior, they're this or that's going to actually change it. You know, I mean, look at Dhritarashtra. 5 days perfected the yoga system. What yogis you hear about doing that in 5 days, right? 5 days. Now, is that qualified, or, you know, would that be qualified? Right? So, but the point is he's so qualified as a yogi, but now his attachment to his sons, now does that become okay?
No.
No. So what's wrong is always wrong. But the point is you have to be able to distinguish between what's the principle of it and what's the form of it. Because... if the principle is being attained using an inferior form, that's fine. But if the principle is not being obtained, then using an inferior form is basically a waste of time. You know what I'm saying? I want to make the potato into, you know, smaller pieces. I use a hammer. Right? Yeah. Or just say, hey, you know, and the other guy says, ah, you're using that wimp hammer. You know, I got a 5-pound hammer here. You know? What do you call them in kilos? 2.5 kilo hammer?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I got a 2.5 kilo hammer here. You know? But it's only on the short thing, you know? So you hit the potato. Then someone walks in, no, I got a, you know, 1 meter handle on mine. You want to see potato smashing here. You know, I'll show you potato smashing. You know, so is this how it's supposed to work? Because they're more sophisticated at potato smashing here? Right? You know, in India they call it, you know, when you take the potatoes, you boil it, and then you mush them up, they call it smashed potato. We say mashed, they say smash. Right? So smashed potato. So here is smashed potato. Right? So you can maybe start something, you know, potato chip factory or something.
Sometimes you meet an Indian person, they'll talk about their culture. But yeah. Their culture is cheating rather than the original serving.
Yes. Because otherwise, then what you end up with, you know, bless their souls, you know, because there's the element that is Indian, is that it does end up Indian. It ends up as Hindu. Mm-hmm. You know, and most modern Hindus, they are really opposed to following the Vedic culture, right? Those things that are easy, that are naturally the elements of prosperity from Artha, that they'll follow quite easily. But the things that are dharma, you know, moksha, that, forget it. Because they see it as an impediment for artha. So what's the difference? You know, if an Indian does that, or a Westerner does that, what's the difference? You know what I'm saying? Follow what parts of the culture you like, don't follow what parts you don't want to. You know, and then the Western ones will criticize the Indian ones, and the Indian ones will criticize the Western ones. But they're exactly the same thing. You know what I'm saying? It's the same thing. You know, a table full of pigs in suits, you know, or a farmer, they're the same thing. Right? That makes sense. You know, there's a whole book about it. if anybody wants to know. Yes.
Maharaj, you mentioned that there's weak points of in our daily sadhana practice. Should we concentrate on our strong, you know, like points, or on the weak? Then
no, on the strong. You focus on the strong, but you don't allow the weak to disturb it. So, in other words, our dealing with the negative qualities is so they don't disturb the application of the positive. Because remember, means the element of how you say devotional service is the quicker method. While trying to remove the weaknesses, that's a slower method.
So we just keep it under control.
You keep it under control. If there's opportunity, because the point is there'll always be opportunity to work more with it. Because it is a weakness, it'll always come up. But the point is, it's not about removing the weakness. It's about cultivating devotional service, right? We have to be very, very careful here. Because otherwise, if it's no, it's about getting rid of the weakness, you end up with smartness. If you end up with, oh, we don't care about the weakness, we only do the positive, that's the sahajas. Yeah. So it's a balance. It means that we're focusing, the primary is the strength, right? The secondary is the weakness. Right? So in other words, the weakness should not disturb the primary. The secondary should be in support of the primary, not get in the way of. So that's how we were dealing with it. So it'd be, oh, I'm so this, I'm so that. It says we're not that. That's the conditioning. The soul's different. But that's the conditioning you have to work with, so that's what you'll express through. So that's a problem. Right? But it's a problem because you have to engage it in the Lord's service, not because it's there. Right? Bhima gets angry, but he uses it for Krishna. It's not a problem. But you don't use it for Krishna, it's a problem. That's the difference. Bhima's getting angry, and you know, we see these sages are getting angry. What's the difference? One is devotional, one's not. You know, so in Bhima, that's the ornament. That's what we think. You know, when you think of Bhima, it's about, you know, getting upset and picking up elephants and tossing them around. You know, these kind of tastes. You know, but when you think of the sages, then what's his name, Vishwamitra, then it's a weakness. It's not an ornament. Durvasa, it's not an ornament. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is its connection to the Lord. But there's ways it's connected. Right? Like Satyabhama, then she's at the home, and, you know, Krishna's going to go out, she goes with him. You know, when he goes, he's flying on Garuda, he like that. She doesn't come to the office. She doesn't come to the court. Because in the court, then she's just a person in the court. Now, let us say she goes to the court. Now, the point is, if she wants to get the taste that she gets with her husband, what's she going to have to do to that court?
Speak.
More than speak up. I mean, she's going to have that interaction with her husband the way she wants. She'll have to control the whole court, so she can get the interaction with her husband. So is that honest? No, she has the house to do that. Right? Court has a different purpose. So therefore the mood's different. Not that she couldn't control it, but the mood will be wrong. Because in other words, she's using the court for her purpose of interaction with the husband, rather than the court is there for supporting what the husband does in the way of administration. Does that make sense? So this is the whole point of where mood. It's not the skill, because the point is nowadays skill. It's about mood. It's not about skill. Who knows that? So that's what you have to worry about. These queens are managing huge palaces with thousands of servants. Right? They don't have a manager. They do it themselves. You know what I'm saying? They have their people. But they're the ones organizing it. They're not just sitting back and eating peeled grapes. You know, they're actually organizing it and know what's going on. You know, so that's the point. So that's the thing, is you can get those things there. So you have to see is that it's within the natural scope that it works. If it's not within the natural scope, then being unnatural, it will create unnatural problems. Yeah. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur suggests that both Draupadi and Subhadra, although her name is not mentioned herein, got the same result. None of them had to quit the body. Right, so if the Acharya says, then they seem on their side. So, yeah. Sudha Goswami concludes this chapter by pronouncing this benediction. The subject of the departure of the sons of Pandu for the ultimate goal of life, back to Godhead, is fully auspicious and is perfectly pure. Therefore, anyone who hears this narration with devotional faith certainly gains the devotional service of the Lord, the highest perfection of life. 51. In the beginning of the previous chapter, question 20 was asked by Yudhishthira of Arjuna. The question had three parts. One, Yudhishthira asked after the welfare of Lord Krishna, his family in the Yadu dynasty. Two, Yudhishthira inquired about his brother's welfare. Three, finally, Yudhishthira asked, or is it that you are... You know. So, we can see is that's the actual point of the question. But in it, then he's starting with the broader. How is the, you know, how is Lord Krishna's family, the Yadus... Because if that's okay, then you don't have to ask the third part. Then if the brother's okay, then again you don't have to ask. But it's getting closer. Yes. But if those two aren't working out great, then you have to ask the third one. Right? Below is the essence of Arjuna's answer and Sudha Goswami's comments on it, as derived from the Bhaktivedanta Purports, chapter 15. 1. Arjuna is a dear friend of Sri Krishna. Krishna wonderfully reciprocates with Arjuna in power and glory, which is caused by Arjuna's dependence on Krishna. So, because Arjuna is dependent upon the Lord, he can manifest this great power and glory. This idea that it's mine, I'm separate, and I can do this, then it's Punar Musika Baba. Like that. You know, it's like that. You have big guys, they move out, and then they're literally pumping petrol at a station. Yeah. That's their job.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Mm. You know, so that's how it works, is that wherever you are in the material platform, you go into Krishna consciousness, that can go way up. You can do things that are amazing. Mm. But if you go back to the material platform, that doesn't go with you. Yeah. Right? Because that was what it's called. You can't take it with you. Right? You go right back to wherever you were.
Yeah.
It's that simple. Right, because you're dealing in karma. Karma, that's the same. If you want to translate your bhakti into that, you can do that. Then, of course, you can raise it. But then what's the point? You know, it just works like that. So, because he's dependent upon the Lord, therefore, so much can be done. So the greater the devotee, the greater the things he does, you can understand the greater the dependence. That's what I'm saying.
About this moon and karma?
Yes.
And each one has got its own strengths and weaknesses.
Yes.
And nature. We see that in a community, in a society, or even in an apartment in a society, there are different needs.
Yes.
Tension between the needs of the collective and the needs or the nature of the individual. Sometimes the individual. There is a need for the individual to do something may not be exactly the guna karma.
Mm-hmm.
I understand it's a very vague question, but how to balance the need of the moment or the need of the collective and the need of the individual? Because one may say, well, sacrifice my nature because this is required.
No, but need. But the point is need that's not according to nature is not real need. You know, it's like the 8-year-old needs to smoke a cigarette. It's not a real need. I mean, maybe 8-year-old's extreme, but 10-year-olds, 11-year-olds, you know, if they can get a hold of it, they'll get the cigarette and smoke it. But is it a real need? Is that actually their nature? No, they're a kid. It's not actually a nature. So just because someone has contemplated something, because Krishna says if you contemplate any desire long enough, it turns into a need. But that's the point. You should only contemplate those things that are actually what you're supposed to be contemplating. So because someone needs it, in the modern society, that's enough. That's authority. But the point is do you deserve that need? Because everybody would like to be the center of attention. But the point is the person who has the qualifications, they're the one who does it.
I was coming from a different angle, actually. I was saying that not the person wants to do something. The person sometimes is asked to do something.
That's a whole different thing.
Yeah,
that's a whole different thing.
That's my angle.
Okay. Then you have to be very, very careful. If there's emergency and there's no one else, then one tries one's best. And the point is one tries one's best for Krishna. Whether it comes out perfect or not, that it's been done for Krishna, one's made that endeavor because of the need of the moment, then it's valuable. But it can't be sustained because it's against the nature. You know, it's just like, let's say the person could sit in the kitchen and cook all day and do that, you know, for the rest of their life. But then, you know, they want them to go out and do, you know, let's say collection or something, because they're building the temple, you know. And so, you know, maybe they can, if they have any ability at all, then they can do it for a certain amount of time, and then that's it. And then past that, it falls apart. Like before, a marathon was, you know, an exciting thing. You know, once a year you had the Christmas marathon. Everyone got out there, and everyone tried to be part of it. You know, even people who regularly just don't do. You know, they go out and do something, you know, and you know, a couple of books or this or that. And it was glorious. Even someone who never did went out and distributed two big books, and it was like, wow. You know, but because then, you know, marathons bring in more results, then I know zones where they have 7 marathons a year. So who does it? Only a handful of people. Generally, there's 4 or 5 people in their whole zone that can do it, and that's it. So why not just not call it a marathon, just say that's what they do, that's their service. And then don't tell everybody else they're in Maya because they're not in the marathon. This means you don't understand the difference between natural nature and emergency. So the point is it's emergency that someone can do it. So this idea is that we're not this body, we can do anything, is totally bogus. Otherwise, why does Bhaktivinoda Thakura make the point of emergency? Emergency means it's an emergency. You have to do it. Just like you're not a firefighter, but there's a fire in the kitchen. And, you know, you're standing next to the sink and you got a bucket. So who's supposed to get the water, right? You get the water. Like that. So then it can be done. So that's why one has to be, to work on emergency, you actually have to know what nature is in the first place. So if all you do is say you're not your body, then that means that person doesn't know what they're talking about. Or they know what they're talking about, but it can only be applied temporarily. And so if they try to apply it beyond that, that's when they don't know what they're talking about. Right? So they might know it's this person could do this emergency thing, but they don't understand he can't sustain it. So he did it well. But, you know, a lot of people can do something well for a short time. But it's not something they permanently want to do. Like everybody likes to do an arti. Like let's say if we're doing Janmashtami, you know, let's not take Janmashtami because everyone goes to eat. Let's say something, or Vyas Puja, okay, because it's part of the program. It's before, you know, and then that, you do the offering, the arti for Prabhupada. Not everybody wouldn't mind doing that. You know, so it's not a problem. But everybody could then do, you know, 7 artiks a day, 7 days a week for, you know, the rest of their life. No, a handful. So that's what you have to know. Just because they did a great artik doesn't mean that they can always do it. You know, it's just like someone can lead a kirtan. Can they take part in the 24-hour kirtan? Those guys can sit there all day and do kirtan. Someone else could lead a great kirtan and then after that go to work. You know? So that's what you have to know. So unless you know what's the normal, you can't know what is the exception. Right? If I don't know how the normal things in grammar work, how will I understand exceptions? So that's the problem. So we're working on this, exceptions. No, but that's a more advanced level. You have to know the basics. So like, if I want to be able to understand others' nature, I have to know my own. If I don't know my own, how will I actually know theirs? If I'm not sensitive to know my own, I can't be sensitive to know theirs. Right? And if I can't deal with my own, that means I can't actually be honest enough with myself. I don't want to deal with it. Either that or I don't know how to deal with it. If I don't know how, I won't be able to do it with anybody else. And if I'm doing it with if it's a matter of I could do it, but I don't want to do it myself because it'll come out something that I don't want to know about, then how will you actually be able to be straightforward and honest with someone else? So that's why it's called self-realization. You start with yourself. So as we mentioned before, the me generation is great for that because it's all about themselves. So then they can easily do that. But the problem, the weakness comes is when they have to deal with others. That's where it totally breaks down. So the point is you don't know yourself, you can't know others. And if you can't know others, then you can't organize others. So managing skills is not enough. If managing skills were enough, then our temple presidents from the 70s and early 80s, you know, would still be doing the job. Because those guys could manage. But the weakness was they didn't know how to deal with people. Those who did remained. Suvas, he's still a temple president. He does great. He always knew how to deal with people. He still does. And the other ones, they got in there, they managed great, did great marathons, did great things, but for how long? And now they're not. You know, we need temple presidents all over the world. 400 temples, most of them don't have necessarily qualified. So whoever was before could be now. But they don't actually have the nature. Does that make sense? So emergency is, you can engage someone in an emergency situation as long as you know what's the natural situation for that person. And then you keep your eye on it. And as soon as you start seeing them, you know, not doing well. Because in the past, what it is you engage them in the emergency situation. And then when they leave Krishna consciousness, then you mean just like you said, oh, you're not in your body, Prabhu. And then you get them to do it. And when they leave, then you say, oh, they weren't sincere.
Yes.
Like that.
Yes.
So these two pat phrases, then you manage everything. Oh, excuse me. Surrender, Prabhu. You know, yeah, that's the third one. Does that work, or?
Yeah, it works. At the same time, as you said, there are 400 temples. Basically, a vast majority is a situation of emergency.
Yes. But the point is, why are they in emergency? Because people don't know what's the actual nature. Because the point is what's the natural thing?
Yes.
It means, what happened when Venu, you know, was not working out so well? That was an emergency. Vena was an emergency. There was nobody else. They engaged him as long as he was engageable. And as soon as he wasn't, then they looked for someone who was qualified. Now they knew what was qualified. So that takes promise. So the point is that's why the top leadership is Brahmins, not Kshatriyas and Vaishyas. It's not about administration and economics, it's about the Brahminical. Because then you can identify, here's someone who can manage. And then you give them the space to manage, because they know how to manage. But if you're a lesser quality, it means claiming to be an administrator, but don't have an administrative bone in your body, and so therefore you micromanage and get in the way of a manager, there no real manager will manage. So in other words, there's no shortage of managers. There's a shortage of people who can recognize managers and are willing to let them do their job. That's the real shortage. There's no shortage of managers. A real manager is not going to come into a situation that he can't manage, because he knows management. Yeah. It's just like, let's say you have a bunch of people in the kitchen, they don't know what they're doing, the real cook walks in, but they don't accept his position. So they're telling him to do things that he knows won't work. What's he going to do? He's going to walk out. So that's the problem. The problem is not that. I once saw, they wanted to do a festival program in one city. And these six, you know, devotees, all professionals, bank managers and this and that, they all, you know, businessmen, they all get together. And six of them would organize it. And they'd have these fabulous programs. But then the managers, the higher managers above them, decided, no, they shouldn't be doing this because they're not doing it how I said they should do it. Yes. And so there's no progress. Yes. You know? So I said, there's no programs for Krishna. Right? Right? That's our service. We arrange that there's no programs for Krishna. Right? It means there's no programs, but we're doing that for Krishna. Right? That definitely is going to please Krishna, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the problem. The problem is you have to let a manager manage, just like on a farm. I've seen it myself. I was in a meeting. The 10 people sit around and they're deciding what's going to be planted on the farm. Well, the farmers say that this is the season you got to plant now, and these are the only things you can plant. And they say, no, wait, we have to decide upon it. And they can't all meet there because this one has to take the kid to the dentist and that one had that and this and that. So they meet about 5 days later, right? And then they decide, well, this and that, but this will make more money or this will do that or what about this and that? And then they discuss and then, you know, that doesn't go on. And then it goes out and after another couple of days they make their decision. Okay, we'll grow potatoes. And then the farmer says it's too late. You know, what is this nonsense? What is this? You know, you're supposed to do what we say. I'm talking about a real meeting I was in. Or not in it, I was watching it. I know the farmers. You know, it's just like they're saying, you know, what's going on here? You can't manage a piece of land by a committee. You know. And these are all, you know, these are all suburbanites. You know. Like that. So, you know, suburbanites can manage the suburb, but they can't manage a farm. Farmers manage farms. You know, so that's the problem. These people can do it, but will get in the way. Why? Because they're independent. They're leaders. Bureaucrats are afraid of leaders. Always remember that one. Bureaucrats do not like leaders, because bureaucrat means by the book, exactly by the rule. It's impersonal. I don't have to apply it to the individual. I just have to say, this is the rule. Anybody walks in the door, this is the rule. It makes it so simple for a bureaucrat. Leader means each person is an individual. Each situation is unique. You have to apply. You really have to use your brains. And the leaders do it. They are successful. People like them. People follow them. It freaks bureaucrats out no end. So therefore, you have meetings, you have backroom meetings, you have this and that, and you wipe out the leadership. And then at the same time, you claim we're going to make leadership. You have to be very, very careful of that. Bureaucrats hate leaders because they don't know what they'll do. So you always have to be careful of that. And that's why then leadership doesn't come up, because real leaders won't function in that environment. They know what it is, and they know you don't get involved. Because that's the point. Yudhishthira, he can manage the whole country, he can walk out and go to the forest. That's the point. Leaders can do that. Bureaucrats can't let go and can't lead it. They can manage it, they can't lead it. Bureaucrats are important. They're great under leadership. But you can't run any kind of governance if the top is bureaucracy. It's just a universal principle. And anybody who's successful in the world understands this and knows this. Like that. Yes?
From that point before, when is the point that one can transcend nature and just work under the direction of the guru and do anything?
No, but it's not a matter. It's not that the goal is to transcend nature and then oppose nature. The point is to transcend nature and then you can use it nicely. It's just like this. Let's say you get some new thing and you value it a lot. You're very attached to it. Sometimes it's difficult to use it properly because you're so worried about it. You know, the guy gets a new car. People can't even lean on it or touch it. You know, like this. You know, it's just people freak out. No one wants to be around, right? So the point is transcending means you know what it is and you know what its strength and weaknesses is, so you can use it nicely. You know what I'm saying? The point is this. Why people don't want to look at it because they're worried that their social position won't be strong once they've actually analyzed it.
You know, in other words, let's say the person by nature does puja. Okay, he does the samskars, puja, head pujari, things like that. But, you know, to maintain himself, he's got a job outside. So the point is by nature, you know, within the devotional service, it's brahminical, their occupation. But outside is shudra. Basically, most people don't want to acknowledge that. So the point is, of shudra, then you have to perform your work according to the duties of shudra. You know, in other words, do your work nicely, try to work for the benefit of the company, you know, respect the guy in charge, respect anyone connected to him, relatives, his managers, anything like that. Try to figure out what the company's, you know, objective is and try to apply yourself that you get it. You know, that's what you would do. So it's mixed, yes. But the point is people don't want to acknowledge, oh, we're not, you know, shudra, we're brahma, or this and that. Yes, but you're doing the job of a shudra, and if you don't know that, you won't know what to do. If you go into that job and try to tell everyone what to do because you're the brahman, you'll get fired. You know what I'm saying? So, therefore, unless we can recognize what it is that we're dealing with, then we actually can't function. So the point is if I'm not attached to it, then I can deal with it. Okay, the conditioned nature is that of a shudra. So therefore, now I'll engage this nicely in Krishna service. But if we're attached, then we think, oh, I don't want to be the shudra because I'm the bottom of the pile. Therefore, I will, you know, use some philosophical thing to take it away from that. And so how am I going to engage that in Krishna service? So why am I doing something else? Not because I've transcended, because of social stigma. The real reason that people are talking transcend is either efficiency, that the manager wants to get things done and he doesn't have the right people, but he's going to do it anyway. Fine. But know that it's a temporary situation. You know, you have to get done, you have to work with what you have, so that's fine. But if you think, I can permanently do this, then you're wrong. Right?
Is there ever a time that somebody can just do any emergency service for a long period of time if they're liberated?
Liberated means factually, not just, you know, it means realized liberated. It means every soul is actually on the liberated platform, but they don't know it. And the devotees, they take it up, they're actually liberated. You know, because they're now working in transcendence, but they don't think they are. You know, it's just like we say, okay, this one's going to do that. Oh, who's he? He's just new. Like that. What are we talking about? We're talking about time and space and conditioning and stuff. We're not talking about the soul here. Right? So the thing is we don't realize the position. So I'm talking about here is realized liberated. But the point is the liberated soul, why would he do it unless it's an emergency? Not an emergency, why would he do it? You know what I'm saying? Lord Chaitanya has liberated associates, and they do whatever their natural position is. That's what they do. You know, Ramananda Rai, his left hand man. Right? You know, it means he had Srup Damodar on the right, Ramananda Rai on the left. Okay? Now, he is not only a liberated soul, but an eternal associate. But he's taken the position of a shudra. Not a small shudra, he's governor of Madras province. So that's a huge area. You know? And so then, but he's a shudra. So he accepts that and does that. But he's a liberated soul, he's an eternal associate. You know what I'm saying? In other words, those who are liberated don't mind acting according to what the conditioning is. It's the conditioned souls, they have a problem with it because they're looking at the social stigma. So this whole thing to buck that whole system, it's coming from social stigma or from just practical management. It's very rarely coming from the actual devotional platform. So if it does, it's fine. We also agree you're not the body. One can do so many things. But you do have to consider the body because everybody else does. Does that make sense? Right? You know, so that's the principle. You know, the lady's giving the class, you know, and while she's giving the class, the brahmachari is sitting in the front row or just looking at her face and how she moves and everything like that. So is that useful? No, so that's why they sit in the back. So it's tradition, lady gives a class, men sit in the back, women sit in the front. You understand? Even better, there's a curtain between the women and the men. So you can hear. Because about class is about hearing, right? You don't have to see the lady. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, it's an accepted thing. And it's not a problem. Like in India, you have the Jains. Right? You have the Digambar Jains. Digambar means the directions. Umbar means their clothes. So they're clothed by the directions. What does that mean? Right? They have no clothes. So when you have the lady saints, you know, they also are going naked. But they generally carry a bundle of peacock feathers. Right? You know, because people may not relate to them as a liberated soul. Does that make sense? Yeah. So even though, you know, in their own, they're liberated, but still, you still consider how others are going to deal and see. And then they think, no, but they shouldn't deal. But the point is then why you should be, put yourself in a situation where everybody else has to change and not yourself. That's very inefficient. The efficient system is you adjust yourself, then it all works nicely. So the point is liberated souls can do anything, but they don't have a problem doing what they're doing. Arjuna's liberated, so what's the problem in him going to the forest? Because he expresses his devotion to Krishna through his nature, which is the Kshatriya. So it's not a problem. Because otherwise you'd say, oh, but he wants to come up to the Brahminical platform. Why is Krishna stopping it? There's no need. Krishna's not looking for that. He's looking for the improvement in devotion, in Brahminical culture, not in occupation. Right? Those who have Brahminical nature, they do that. Those who don't have to do that. But culture, everybody's is supposed to be Brahminical. So improve the Brahminical culture, and then that's where we attack. No one's talking about doing achmans and things and stuff like that. You know, they're not talking about the technical points. They're talking about the social rights. It's not about technical at all. Does that make sense? So one has to be very, very careful with this. Otherwise, then one will mistake something mundane for something spiritual. Does that make sense? So the point is that one understands the nature and engages that in the Lord's service. That's all you have to do. Now, that can be done within the general social context or just within the ashram context. Does that make sense? Like living in the temple or in an ashram, then you apply your nature within duties within that ashram. Right? And if you're not living in the ashram, then you apply your nature and the duties outside the ashram. Does that make sense? Yes.
What questions can we ask ourselves to better understand our conditioned nature?
What do you mean by understand your conditioned nature?
You mentioned that we should engage our nature in service, but what questions can we ask ourselves to better understand our condition? To understand our condition.
It means, as we said, what's the attitude? Why do you do things? You want to know why. What do you want to gain? What's the basis of it? What's the impetus?
To understand what particular service.
No, no, I'm saying that's what you're asking. Okay. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. 2. Arjuna gives examples of the loving reciprocations between him and Krishna in fraternal rasa. Okay. Oh, so that was one to six purports, and then this is 7 to 17. 3. Such dealings of pure devotees with Krishna are fully satisfying. According to his plan, the Lord arranges for the give and take of such dealings with his associates in the course of his pastime. Because the give and take, see, the thing is, if everybody's always the same, then where's the taste? Everybody's unique and different. That's what's special. The unique and different within what the plan that fits together. Right? If everyone's unique and different, that you can't stick it all together, then you don't have much. Right? Does that make sense? Like, you could probably stick more conservatives in a room together and interact than you could bohemians. You know, bohemians need the space, you know, the express. You know what I'm saying? No? Yeah. Ideal is one bohemian per room. And then when they feel like it, they can interact. Does that make sense? So the difficulty is that this give and take, everyone's unique. So he's dealing with everybody, right? It means the 16,000 queens, it's not that the other queens say, hey, we can get a parijata also. That's not, no, they don't have the nature. They don't have the, what do you call it, the chutzpah. Right? That requires chutzpah, right? And then, the natural reciprocation, Krishna's got panache, right? So he can get it. Four, Maya, does that make sense? So everyone's an individual, but you're fitting into a structure. This is the thing, we think if I fit into a structure, there's no individuality. Right? So the liberal worries about that. Conservative worries if there's no structure, there's no efficiency. He doesn't worry about the individual. But the Vedic, it's about how the individual fits into the structure. Yes. Not about how the structure is applied to the individual. That's why it's self-realization. You understand how you, as an individual, fit in the structure. Right? So there's no problems here. The problem is when people reverse that. How to apply the structure to the individual. Right, and then make them part of the structure. That's the conservative view. And then the liberals know we want to keep our independence, so it's about the individual. So you take this natural balance system and create this mundane duality. That's what happens. And then we fight over that and then think it's something, you know, a point of development or advancement. You know, we will develop by this, but we can't. Four. Maya is the condition of the illusory separation from Krishna. It is completely different from the loving ecstatic separation that Arjuna felt. Right? So illusory separation was not actually separated. Krishna, see, everything is Krishna. Right? You're sitting on Krishna, you're breathing Krishna, you can breathe, that's Krishna. You know, everything is Krishna. But we think I'm separated from him. Right? It's not that I'm worried that I'm separated. I just don't see him, so we're separated. So that's illusion. So here is loving exchange. This one is aware of Krishna and everything and feeling that separation because the personal interaction isn't going on. Even though thinking about him and that interaction, you're actually interacting. But there's a different flavor when it's done through meditation that you're directly interacting with Krishna or it's done externally. You understand? Yeah. One becomes free from Maya through association of devotees and by remembering the Lord's instructions, by chanting, reading the scriptures, etc. Because Krishna is eternally present, one can even become liberated from illusion simply by understanding Krishna's birth and activities. That Krishna is eternally present. So it's the idea, it's Kali, like it's in the class, yes, it's Kali Yuga. So how do we, Krishna's not present in Kali Yuga? Well, how does this work? You know. Krishna, you know, says maybe Bhagavan, he's not present, you know, as an avatar, but as Brahman and Paramatma, he's present. And what created things? Which aspect? Right? Everything's expanding from Brahman because it's impersonal, right? You know, you have rivers. That's impersonal. You understand? It's generic. Generic means impersonal. Impersonal doesn't mean nothing. Impersonal means generic. Right? There's a crowd of people. That's impersonal. You understand? Because it's not specific. Right? So that's Brahman. Krishna extends into everything as Brahman. And so that's the potency why everything functions. Then he expands his Paramatma into everything, and he sanctions our involvement with his potencies. In other words, you have to have sanction to interact with Brahman. Right? Means, in other words, you want to operate this part of material energy, which is Brahman. So to do that, you have to have the sanction of Paramatma that you can do that. So the impersonal element is because it's generic. So the devotee, seeing the generic, thinks of Krishna, right? Like the gopis see the tamal tree. It's black. All tamal trees are black. But that blackness reminds them of Krishna as a person. So the tamal tree, then they think of Krishna. Do you understand? That's the system. So you're starting from the generic there. Or you can start directly. You see the shoes. Shoes are shoes, but they're Krishna's shoes. So therefore you remember Krishna. Right? So that's Udipan. So it's not a problem. It's just a matter of how quick it is. Does it immediately bring out the personal, or do we have to go through a little intellectual steps before we get to it? Is that what it is? So that's what's happening. So Krishna, there's an illusion of separation. So Krishna is eternally present. So one can become liberated from illusion simply by understanding Krishna's birth and activity. So if that's what you're understanding and why he's doing it, it's about interacting with devotees. He appears for the devotees. He appears to attract the devotees, to interact with the devotees, to express that love with devotees. Then that itself will take you back to Godhead, because then you'll see everything connected to Krishna. Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yes.
So is our aim to... instantly think of Krishna as a person rather than go through the intellectual steps? Like, that's the process, but then...
It'll get to there. It'll come automatically. You know, it's just like, let's say I say a name.
Yeah.
Okay, but you've heard the name before, or even, you know, maybe you've met that. I know that name. What is it? You know, you have to go through something until you finally get it. But if you're more familiar, I say the name, and immediately you're thinking about the person, the qualities, the interaction, the...
Yeah, with the name I understand, but with shoes, for example, like, it could be, so any shoes will make you think of Krishna because Krishna has shoes? Or?
Could be. It's just a matter of whatever happens. That means it's not, what does didactic mean?
Sorry?
Didactic,
pedagogical, easy to understand.
Didactic is easy to understand. Okay, so this is the opposite. So it's not we don't have to complicate it. It's what things remind us of Krishna, that's what we use, because it's going to be different according to nature. Right? If the mom walks into the child's room and sees some small shoes, there's a good chance they belong to the kid. Right? Does that make sense? You know.
But is someone who's on the transcendental platform, are they always thinking of Krishna no matter what's going on, no matter what they see?
No matter what. It's just like, let us say, you know, let's take high school, right? You know, it doesn't matter what's happening in the class. The boy's thinking of the girl's thinking of the boys, right? You know, that's the whole thing, you know. Notes, you know, whatever it is, this, that, and, you know, it's just, that's what's going on. It doesn't matter what the situation. You know, so that's a perverted form. That's the point. It's natural. It's done as a human. It's not this mystical thing. It's natural. We're people. You just become so attached to Krishna that all you think of is Krishna.
So the point of it stopping you from fashioning, like, you know, if the boy is so, like, thinking about the girl all the time, then they can't answer questions in class. And,
yeah, basically. So that's the thing, is sometimes you see, that's the point. Acharyas, then they generally try to avoid allowing that to happen. Like that. But the Paramahamsa, the Abhidhut, he doesn't worry about it. He just remembers Krishna, and it doesn't matter what he's doing, he's not worried about it.
So it's under one's control?
Yeah, basically. At the same time, it might be beyond, but generally it's under one's control. If one's come for that purpose, then it's under one's control. It means, in other words, Krishna allows you to function.
Yeah.
5. Krishna is always here and doesn't expire when he leaves this world. Well, he always is here. It's just that he performs the pastimes. something like that. You know, just as, you know, he's not in Hastinapur, he's in Dwarka. So it's just that, you know, when he quote-unquote leaves, this Dwarka is a little farther away. That's all. Right, so the Dwarka there is unmanifest. So now the pastimes are going on in Dwarka and this and that. You know, so it's always going on. But by material vision, then Dwarka sunk. Right? You have it sunk and you have it sank. Oh, I guess because it deals with ships, and a lot has to do with ships, and they have a variety of terminology.
Yesterday in the class you were mentioning the Express of Kali Yuga, and that the modern world doesn't have a problem with the quality, like cleanliness and
chance control. Yeah, we just have to stop. Kind of focus here, because somehow or another this sunk and sank, and it reminded me, I don't know, as a kid, mother told us a little story. But there were three cats, right? I don't know if I'll say it right, because of my dialect, but there were three cats, un, deux, trois, right? And they were doing something, and they went out on, they got on, I don't know how it is, but there was a little lake, and they got on some branch and all that, flowed out in the water, but they were too heavy. So, un, deux, trois, cat sank. No. Now that we said that, now we can move on. Yes, okay. So you were saying?
So I'm saying that you mentioned that Krishna is always present with his saints.
Yes.
So he created the world in Kali Yuga. So we can see that the modern society has no problem with clean environment.
The higher society doesn't mind anything technically in the mode of goodness, just their purpose of dealing with it is for fruitive. So if they're dealing with goodness, means they're operating in goodness with the mentalities and passion. Right? So those people are successful. The ones that are functioning with mentalities and ignorance, they're generally the ones that it doesn't work for them. You don't see the connection between their work and their results. It's an interesting quote yesterday. It says, it's something like this, that life's, or the world's a banquet, that most poor suckers are starving to death.
So the second half of the question.
Okay.
Was that... So when we see all this discussion now, it's basically that we haven't really achieved those qualities which the modern world doesn't even mind.
It doesn't even mind. That's the whole point, that this idea is we have to change everything, because they don't mind. Like I said, priests walk around in robes. No one minds. The point is the priest walks around in the robe. You're not a priest, you don't walk around in a robe. So then that's fine, but don't claim I'm going to have the authority and the position, social position and the respect of a priest, but I'm going to walk around in ordinary clothes. If you want to do that, then you have to be, you know, like a, not sure, like an Episcopalian or something, or, you know, like that. Then you can do that. But most everybody else, the priests walk around in some weirdo outfit. And they do it today. That means we visited, in its day was the biggest East Orthodox monastery in Finland. It used to be, when Finland was bigger, went farther east, then it was there. It was, you know, 400 monks. And then the Russians extended the border. And so then they moved it during, I think, the Second World War. And then they were helped to move the monastery farther into Finland. And so all 400 monks went. But then, you know, now there's only 12. But it's still famous. Everyone goes visit Sarah and everything, and everybody just wears their regular outfit. Everything goes on normally like they do as monks. You know what I'm saying? You know, the Buddhists walk around in their Buddhist stuff and no one minds, you know. You know what I'm saying? The Shinto guy wears his stuff, no one cares. You know, the voodoo walla has his feathers and that, no one's upset. You know, just don't bother him, don't make him upset. You know, like that. So this whole thing is like you're saying, all the qualities we're talking about, being responsible, being this, that, they're all fine, but we fit them into the Vedic structure which is able to accommodate applying this everywhere. Well, the modern structure, you only really see it in the higher echelons. You don't see it in the lower, right? It's rare you go into, let's say, a poor man's house and it's clean. It may have nothing in it. There's very less furniture, but it's not necessarily clean. It might be, but then that's very individual. But if you go into a very rich person's house, if it's not clean, you would think there's something wrong here. You understand? So it's just, but in the Vedic, you can have this simple villager, and his place is clean. They cat on the floors, they do all the things. So not only is clean, it's pure. So it's able to pervade the whole society. So that's why it's called Brahminical culture. Right? It means in the Western culture, they have the term. It's not well known or well used a lot, but the Boston Brahmins. Now, I always thought that the Boston Brahmins meant the professors at the universities in Boston, because there's 10 universities there, you know, Harvard and MIT and all these different things. So I always thought it meant them. But what it means is the Boston Brahmins means the higher caste Americans who are from those who originally landed, you know, on the, you know, if they came on the Mayfair, you just don't get better than that. You know, but they came over in the 1600s, like that. So those families from those original settlers, they actually keep the lines and they're considered a separate class of people. You know, that's why like the Kennedys, you hear the Kennedys, they're Boston Brahmins. So they're just considered in this higher, you know. So that concept is not actually a problem. You know, the only ones that have a real problem with it means that the general people don't have problems as long as they deal nicely, right? Because the thing is the American way is that if you can do something and become, you know, filthy rich, then, you know, all glories, you know, because that's what it's for. As long as you don't exploit and look down your nose at everybody else. Mm-hmm. But the intellectuals will have a problem with it. So it's not a balanced society. It's not well formed that everybody has their position in everybody. You know what I'm saying? Because the ones with money don't necessarily respect the ones with knowledge. You know, so it's not well done. So the point is what we're talking about is what everyone's looking for. You just have to know how to present it. You know, just like if you're doing school preaching, and so if you're talking to a bunch of first graders, you're going to talk differently than 12th graders. You're going to talk differently if you're university. So you just, one has to learn how to talk. One hasn't figured out how to talk. It's not that you have to change what we do. Then that's the neophyte thing, is you change the externals. It may make it a little easier, but the point is you haven't made them Krishna conscious. Just because we fit in, how does fitting in, where is that a glory? You know what I'm saying? That's just exactly, means what is it? Every girl wants to fit in, but fit in with who? Something special. Okay, let's say the girls in high school. Those who fit in means, who are we talking about? The cheerleaders. How many of them are there? Right? There's going to be, technically there's going to be one. And then she's going to have two, maximum three real close ones. And then there's the other, you know, 8 or 10 or 12, however many there are. And that means the rest of the student body doesn't fit in. So fitting in means fitting into something unique. You know, but, you know, who wants to fit into the rest that aren't unique? Right? Unless they're special themselves. They were the cheerleader at the other school. It got too political. They just don't want to do it. So they come to the new high school. And then they try to fit in to everybody else. So they try to stay out of the way. They don't dress up. They don't do the makeup. So everyone just thinks they're ordinary. But that's a unique individual that they've made that idea to do. But this is not for the higher purpose. This is just you want to fit in because you feel comfortable. Oh, I feel so uncomfortable walking down the street, people looking at me. Yeah, then you can't do any nonsense. They don't look at you, you can do whatever you want.
So there's no, the point is the Vedic culture, its weakness is because it's all goodness, that's where the weakness comes that people don't understand. They like cleanliness, but only so much. You know? Like that. But the point is with time, they can, with knowledge and association and practice, they can get to appreciate it. But if we don't start that it's good, you know what I'm saying? Like that. Like the kid won't walk if everybody thinks it's bad. Like that. Okay. At least at the end of one's life, one should detach oneself from all material dependencies and designations and leave home to fix his mind in incessantly thinking of Krishna. Okay. So even here, leaving home, it means generally the easiest is switching the environment. As we mentioned before, the environment does have an effect, but it's not that the environment is the total thing. So leave home can either mean leave home, meaning that physically leave home, or leave home means leave the mentality of this is home and cultivating it and developing it and everything like that. One can master this art and attain the same result of going... If one can master this art and attain it.
You didn't speak the first sentence.
Sorry?
You didn't read the first sentence.
But one must... Oh, I see. Okay. Okay. At least at the end of one's life, one should detach oneself from all material dependencies and designations. Right? Because then here, I'm the grihastha, I'm the this, I'm the that. And leave home to fix his mind in incessantly thinking of Krishna. So, in other words... He's giving up material dependencies and designations. That's the point that you want to do. So if you can do that at home, fine. If you have to leave home, then that's what you have to do.
Maharaj?
Yes?
What is the situation where you would have to leave home?
People in the home expect you to be very much part of whatever they're doing.
But if you're on top of that...
Then it doesn't matter. That's why, see, generally for the man it comes harder because there's the point is you want to control it, organize it, make it nice. So then the thing is that, so for men it's easier to not be in the home environment. You know what I'm saying? Where it's all happening. So that's why it's recommended. The vanaprastha lives on the edge of the village.
Yes.
Right? So they're not in the home, but they're not completely out in the boonies, right? Like that. So then, you know, so either edge of the village or edge of the forest, one or the other, you know. So but for the women, being in the home environment, it's more of a natural environment for them. So, but then they have to be detached and leave it up to the others in the house. In other words, you may be the elder lady, but it's up to the, you know, daughters-in-laws and this and that. They're running the house. Then you can do it. If you want to maintain control of the house, then okay, you do that. But then the point is do that to connect it to Krishna. But at some point you have to let go. You know. Does that make sense? So that's the point. The option is, the men is recommended shifting, the women can either shift with the husband or stay in the home. It doesn't matter. Whichever is best for them. 7. But one must begin training and live purely in one's life to attain success at the time of death by fixing one's mind in Krishna and going back to Godhead. If one can master this art and attain the same result of going back to Godhead while still within this body. I think it's supposed to be one can master this art and obtain the same result, rather than if.
If so.
Or if so, one can, yeah, one or the other. Either add a so or drop an if.
Well, if one can master this art, then
yeah, or,
they will attain
yeah,
okay, the same result.
Where are we getting it? More options. Or, if so, one can then. Yes. Okay. Okay, so that's the whole point that's being gained there. Because Krishna is... Krishna is who we're looking for. That's the illusion is that Krishna is separate. So Krishna is you know, in everything. Okay, so then that's... anything else on this chapter? So, then we move to 16 to 19. Part 4. Okay, so we have here then chapter 16, how Parikit received the age of Kali, 17, punishment and reward of Kali, 18, Maharaj Parikit cursed by a Brahmin boy, and 19, appearance of Sukadeva Goswami. Right? Because this whole, the question was, how was it spoken? How did it come to be spoken? How did Parikit and Sukadeva meet? Right? So this is how it's spoken, is that Parikit Maharaj is cursed. You know, how is he cursed? Because it goes back to, you know, how he's dealing with Kali. And how does, but how is Parikit there? That goes back to the Pandavas. How is it he's the king? Right, because the Pandavas, because now Yudhishthira puts Parikit on the throne and then leaves. Right, and so, does that make sense? So it's all a natural discussion of how you get to the that point. Right. Interesting, the very bottom you have on the questions, it's an error, bookmark not defined. What to do? Okay, so chapter 16. How Parikit received the age of Kali. Pratigya, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.16.4. Once when Maharaj Parikit was on his way to conquer the world, he saw the master of Kali Yuga, who was lower than a Shudra, disguised as a king, and herding the legs of a cow and bull. The king at once got hold of him to deal sufficient punishment. So the whole thing is about that he's going around to see. Conquer the world means that it's everything's going nicer. There's no kings behaving improperly, that everything's going well, the citizens are being taken care of, the planet's being dealt with properly. So in doing this, then he met Kali Yuga personified, who is improperly dealing with the legs of the cow and the bull, right? Because their legs are dharma. So in Kali Yuga, then only one leg can stand, and even that you'll slowly whittle away at. You know, it's just like, let us say, the standard thing, you go into a store, you get something, and then you pay for it. Right? But there are places where you have stores that you go up to the door, and you tell them what you want, give them the money, then they go into the store, get it for you, and hand it to you. Like that. Depending upon the neighborhood.
Yes. Yes.
You know what I'm saying? You know, in other words, the situation, in other words, if the element of honesty or truth is there, people aren't going to steal. They're going to take the thing and give you the, and then go. Right? Because before it was just you had the things. Now you have all those little machines that then beep when you go out. You know, if something's there. Because, you know, honesty's dropped. But then some of them, they don't even trust you that much. Right? So you have to give the money at the door. Understand? So the point is because of that one thing, so many things can get done. Mm-hmm. You know, but as that goes down, like we're saying, internet is advancing, you know, it's like this. But if there's no trust, no truth, then you can't run, this whole internet business can't function. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Somebody says, it's just, one can say, no, but they're taking a credit card, they're getting things and that, but why would you trust a credit card? As I mentioned, one devotee was telling me that the Congo was, you know, very nicely developed. And then, I'm not sure which Congo it was. It was Belgium or the one on the East Coast?
just below Kenya. Nobody knows. Okay, whatever it is. There's a Congo over there.
Tanzania?
No, it's a Congo.
Democratic Republic.
But yeah, but whose was it? Was it the Belgian Congo?
Yeah,
Belgium, okay. So that, they had, it was very nicely developed and that, and very wealthy because they have a lot of natural wealth. But then when they left and all the civil wars and this and that, there's not one bridge left in the place. And there's tons of water, right? I think Victoria Falls is over there, so there's a lot of water there. And so it used to be you could drive from Kenya down to the capital, I think, in 5 or 6 hours. Now it takes you 3 weeks. You know, you don't drive. You know, so they were saying is that the people won't, even though the country has flat money, the people won't deal with it. They don't trust it. You have to actually give, you know, diamonds or gold or something. You have to, then they'll trade in that. So the point is you know, that's very un-internet-y. You know? It's very. So that trust is not there, it can't work. So therefore, those qualities are in the legs of the bull and the cow, because they represent dharma. So if you attack those legs, then, you understand? So if you attack these elements of the dharma, then that's what Kali is doing. So that's why one wants to be very careful. What is the reason, what's the whole motive that you're questioning activities or rules within the Vedic culture? Is it coming from a higher understanding, or is it coming from a higher understanding, or the need for a higher understanding, or is it a need for a lower application? You understand? Mm-hmm. Where's the benefit going to be? Is it because it's going to make you more spiritual, because you get something mundane practically accomplished? Does this make sense? Okay, so end here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai.
Sama Veda, Bhaktivinoda ki,
Jai.
Jai Nitai, Gaura Srimadanti.